Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of May 25th through June 1st. This week we have our liturgy issue, and in honor of that, we have an interview with Jaime Lara, who's a professor at Yale Divinity School. Professor Lara speaks with Michael O'Loughlin, who is an intern here in America and a student at the Divinity School, about some of the history of church architecture and also looking at some trends in current architecture, including the new L.A. Cathedral and the new cathedral in Oakland, California. Professor Lara spoke with Michael on the campus of Yale Divinity School in New Haven.
I'd like to begin by asking you if you could talk a bit about why it's important to bring architecture and space into a conversation surrounding liturgy.
That's a very good question to begin with, because liturgy of its essence involves us in space and time. Liturgy is not mental prayer. It's rather enacted worship, which involves sacraments, our human bodies, the way we interact with one another, and the way we interact with symbols and with elements such as tables, pulpits, crosses, doors, water in the font, Eucharistic reservation in the tabernacle. And so of its very nature, liturgy always is architectural or always has an architectural content.
The way most Catholic churches are now arranged, with pews facing the altar in theater-style seating, has not always been the norm. Can you talk about the various ways that Christians have utilized space in the past?
Well, you're quite correct in saying that it present arrangement has not always been the norm, because we have always had examples of churches in the round, or churches where there was a type of dual polarity. That is to say that the altar and the Eucharist was celebrated at one end of the building, and the word service and the preaching and the readings took place at the other end of the building. That, by and large, has gone out of use, but it has existed. There have been the use of curtained areas or screened areas in churches or balconies that were either for the faithful or even for the altars. So there has been a great variety over the course of the last 2,000 years. Most Christians have a very limited view of what liturgical space is. The other thing that we have to realize is that the use of pews in churches is really a relatively late phenomenon. It certainly was not known before the Protestant Reformation and the Catholic Counter-Reformation. So the determination of space of everyone sitting looking the same direction is a rather recent phenomenon. Liturgical space was much more fluid.
Can we talk a bit about specific pieces of furniture now? Regarding baptismal fonts, many Catholics are used to the priests dripping some water over the forehead of infants. But has this always been how baptisms were done? Are there different ways of baptizing? And what are we seeing happening now?
Well, we certainly are seeing a revitalization of the fullness of baptism. And we are seeing a historical return to baptism as an adult sacrament. That is to say, even though numerically the Catholic Church baptizes more infants every year, the norm for baptism is always adult baptism. And archaeology, architectural history, and research on liturgical texts has shown us that for the greater part of the first millennium, and even past the first millennium, fonts were large, fonts were able to be entered by an adult or at least a large child, that there was a quantity of water. More often than not, that water was moving, that it was flowing, that the font was precisely that, a fountain, as well as bath, that it had a symbolism in its shape. It was either shaped as a cross, It was shaped as a sarcophagus. It was shaped in an oval form. All of these were symbols that we are returning to as we clarify in our ecclesiastical documents the shape of baptism and what baptism is as a public ceremony of entrance into the Catholic Church. In terms of other furniture, like the altar, there has been a move away from the altar as sarcophagus, just a box, or let's say a rectangular box, and an incorporation also of elements of table. In my opinion, the best altars combine something both of the sarcophagus and of the table element. In terms of the pulpit, or the ambo, as we would call it, a return to a shape that facilitates reading, that facilitates speaking, perhaps even for people who have some handicap and who could not easily mount steps. And, of course, with our electronic equipment, we have the wherewithal now to amplify the voice, to do things that were not possible in earlier ages.
Could you talk about some trends in terms of worship space and liturgy that emerged from the Second Vatican Council?
Well, certainly there were various models that came out of the Second Vatican Council. Not all of them extremely good. In terms of architecture, what I have discovered is that there were a lot of people who were working in architecture or liturgical design after the Second Vatican Council who had very little, if any, formation either in history, liturgy, or in theology. They may have had degrees in interior design, but they didn't perhaps know the particular needs. As I mentioned before, the liturgical spaces did not have pews. There is no indication that we're going to go back to that. Certainly we're going to need seats, but perhaps a much more of a flexible arrangement. After the Second Vatican Council, one model that was chosen was the thrust stage, which came out of the modern movement in theater design. Some early Protestant churches of the 20th century had used the thrust stage also. A few Catholic churches went in the direction of inclined seating or even theater-like seating. By and large, there has been a move away from that. I think that's it, and that's a good move away. Some churches, perhaps young communities such as a chapel on a college campus, have experimented with two rooms, a room for the Eucharist, a room for the Word. Or the model that I mentioned before, an ancient, I'll say medieval model, very common in Spain, for example, in southern Europe, of having the church with two apses or two sacred areas, one at the east end, usually for the altar, and one at the west end, usually for the pulpit, the seating of the clergy, the word service. Whatever is going to develop, certainly we are attuned to the need for full participation. And full participation, I think, means first and foremost visibility and audibility. And so with our electronic equipment, we can certainly help in the realm of audibility. I'm not so sure that the model that, for example, St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City has chosen is the best. That is television screens in the side aisles. But, of course, they're dealing with an extant building from the 19th century, and they're attempting to improve visibility. You may know that the acoustics in churches has always been a problem, especially in larger churches. The National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, Washington, has gone through a number of acoustical designs, equipment over the course of the years, and acoustics will be more and more important as music becomes more important in Catholic churches, both choral music, choirs, congregational music, soloists, and, of course, the spoken word.
Do you have any predictions for the future of worship space in Catholic churches?
Well, I think Catholic churches are going to be more and more attuned to what we call green architecture. That is, to building with materials that in no way contaminate the atmosphere, but also the use of natural materials, elegantly done, but natural materials that might be reused lumber or stone or other materials that come from nature and allow us to be less destructive of the natural environment. At the same time, I think there is a trend to incorporate more of nature into the worship space, either by clear glass windows so that nature becomes a type of backdrop and we pray as stewards of creation for our larger world, the world that's beyond the walls of our building. Some churches have gone in the direction of a narthex that might have a type of green area, that is, living plants. So that is certainly a trend. Another trend that I see is a return to color. And most people who know the buildings built after the Second Vatican Council remember buildings that were, for want of a better word, rather bland. Beige was a favorite color in home design, in interior decorating of hotels and theaters, and I see a move away from that. The Los Angeles Cathedral, for example, I think is probably the last of the great modernist movements, modernist buildings, but I think it lost out on the ability to relate color-wise to the fact that it sits in Los Angeles at the seam between Thai Town, the home of the people from Thailand, Chinatown, and also Olivera Street, which is the original center of the Mexican community. When you have Chinese, Thai, and Mexicans, you have, of course, colors and bright colors. So I think there's a move toward murals, that is, art on walls. There is a move toward using icons in the strict sense of the Byzantine icon. And I also think there is probably, with our sensitivity to new cultures, peoples from other lands immigrating to the United States, to their sense of sacred space and their sense of sacred color and images. And probably also better acoustics will certainly be a trend for the future.
What does architecture, how does it work with building up the community of faith?
Well, that's a great question, because we are more attuned today to the role of the assembly. Remember, in the church after the Council of Trent, the ideal or the image was the assembly that sat, watched, observed from afar, said its own prayers, so it was active in that way, occasionally sang, but it was more the theatrical model, or it was the model of the great throne room, where Catholics came into the presence of the king enthroned on a gilded altarpiece, and the center of worship was the Eucharistic tabernacle. Today, we're much more attuned to the assembly and to the way in which space forms community and forms a sense of community, where people relate not only to one another's back in the sense of sitting in military fashion, but they relate in some way where they can see other people in the assembly, they can see faces, they can interact. Some have chosen the route of, or the model of, the altar in the very center. And I don't think that actually works, because, first of all, the presider or the celebrant always has his back to a part of the congregation. At the same time, there is something to be said about gathering the community around the altar, because in the Catholic tradition, the altar is usually fixed to the floor. It's usually not a table that's moved out and back in for the occasion, because it has a symbolism of a axis mundi, that is a center of a world or the world, and also the symbolism of being of Christ himself as our center. So some way in which the altar is central, but not necessarily at the exact central point in the building. There is a science that has developed among architects who work across architecture and psychology, and we call it the science of proxemics. And proxemics is a determination of how people react in a space or interact in a space, determined by the distance they are from the speaker, the height of the speaker or the person they're observing, or the their ability to see or to hear. It's no secret that people who sit at the very back of the church, who can see very little, sit behind a column, lose interest very quickly and get involved in other things, conversations, or praying their rosary, or today talking on their cell phone even. And at a certain distance from the altar or from the pulpit, we can actually calculate that the interest level starts to drop off. So there is some type of scientific basis for this. I think one space that's particularly successful is the new cathedral of Oakland, California, and that's called the Cathedral of Christ of the Light. It's successful, I think, for two reasons. First of all, it has something that is truly Catholic, and that is it has what we talk in architectural terms as feminine qualities. Now, that might sound strange to talk about architecture and feminine qualities, but it has curves. It has the use of circles, ovals, especially ovals, in addition to the rectilinear elements in the building. And I think that is probably something very typical of Catholic architecture. Catholic architecture, even if it in its Romanesque or its Gothic forms, always have these more feminine elements. I would contrast the Cathedral of Oakland to the cathedral, the new cathedral of Our Lady of the Angelus in Los Angeles, California, which is much more of a box, much more rectilinear, much more hard lines and angles of 90 degrees. And for that reason, I think not only is the Cathedral of Oakland more modern, in the sense it's later, but I think it's probably much more successful. The other thing about the Cathedral of Oakland, of Christ of the Light, is its use of color in its side chapels. So there are bright colors, vermilion, pink, electric blue, even in the side chapels. And the color is sparse, but it's used very, very well to punctuate and to create little caves of private devotion. So I think in terms of the formation of community and the assembly, the curving lines and the ability to gather around, even on three sides, to gather ministers, musicians, presiders, and of course the active assembly, I think that is not only the future, but I think that is probably the best representation of the new movement in liturgical architecture.
We want to thank Professor Jaime Lara for sitting down with Michael O'Loughlin for that interview. And just a reminder that starting this week, we roll into our summer schedule where we will be publishing bi-weekly, so we will be having podcasts on that schedule. Although on occasion we will publish a special weekly podcast on various issues that come up, including a future discussion of the fate of newspapers and their potential demise. Just a reminder, you can respond to our conversations by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.